Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Every Sunday morning at 9, join me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM. Each week we'll be exploring the wonderful world of modern jazz. From hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz, Sunday mornings at 9 on Sheffield Live.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Dawn? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident. To boldly go where no
man has gone before. It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk, and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
Happy, happy Halloween, Halloween, Halloween. Happy, happy Halloween, Silver Shamrock. Happy, happy Halloween, Halloween, Halloween. Happy, happy Halloween, Silver Shamrock.
It's almost time, kids. The clock is ticking. Be in front of your TV sets for the Horrorthon. And remember the big giveaway at 9. Don't miss it. And don't forget to wear your masks. The clock is ticking. It's almost time.
Happy, happy Halloween, Halloween, Halloween. Happy, happy Halloween, Silver Shamrock. Happy, happy Halloween, Halloween, Halloween.
Good afternoon, and you are listening to the film show on Sheffield Live, a Halloween special with me, Martin.
And me, Denise.
And me, Mel.
Okay, do not adjust your sets. You are listening to the film show on Sheffield Live, but that was not our usual opening piece of music. What's going on, Martin?
That's the Silver Shamrock radio ad from Halloween 3. For my money, the best Halloween
We
film.
Are still on Halloween. I we know. Are still Halloween.
All the Halloween celebrations yeah. seem to be happening this weekend,
well,
it seems. You know,
special guest in the studio this week is Melanie Gourlay, and she is... So, for some people, Christmas is the big time of year. For Mel, Halloween is the big time of year. Yeah. So, Mel's come to join us today to help us pick out the highlights of celluloid screens, which we'll do a bit later, and to talk about your new festival,
yeah.
which we will come up to later in the show. Very exciting.
Strangely enough, the whole show seems to be very much themed around horror in various different ways. So to kick off with, a bit of news, it's been announced that Luca Guadagnino...
He's been practising pronouncing that.
The Italian filmmaker who never seems to stop working, to be honest, he's planning to remake American Psycho, Bret Easton Ellis's notorious novel from the early 90s, filmed by Mary Harron 20-odd years ago.
I'm not sure I need a remake.
I
do
don't
you?
Think anybody needs a remake.
But it's him, and I love him, so...
Yeah, and he has... He has form in making horror films.
Yeah, Suspiria's excellent.
He did Suspiria. Have you seen Bones and All?
I have, yes. Yeah.
That is the best cannibal film ever, yeah. I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mike Rylance is terrifying in it, isn't it?
Yeah.
So he's got, he knows what he's doing with it,
yeah.
But there's been some things going around about who might play Patrick Bateman in this, and I've got to say, half the people, in fact, more than half the people they've mentioned, I've never heard of. They've been in television shows. And there was one, ridiculous things. Well, why can't it be a woman? And I said, well, there's lots of reasons why it can't be. Because, you know...
I can't tell the misogyny, but
have you not? Yeah. You know, that's the whole point of the book. Anyway... What are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
What are you going to do about it?
Cast Al Pacino. Yeah.
Yes.
That old one.
He's 84. Oh,
he's still got it. Hoo-ha.
Hoo-ha!
We've got, as well, a picture came out this week of, I just know him as Mr. Bear, but I haven't even seen the bear. I know you watch it, Martin.
I have, yeah.
But
yeah.
Mr. Jeremy Allen White... as Bruce Springsteen. I'm looking at it now. It's a picture of him. So he's in the upcoming film Deliver Me From Nowhere, which is about the recording, I think, of his Nebraska album.
I believe so. That's what he says, yeah.
He looks pretty good to me.
Yeah. Broody, I don't know. Do we need another, you know, musical biopic? There's so many and they don't have a good history, do they? I mean, we've got Tim Chamolet... as Bob Dylan, very, very soon.
I don't like Bob Dylan.
Well, you can't say I don't like Bob Dylan because there's so many iterations of Bob Dylan, isn't there? So saying you don't like Elvis. I don't like lots of Elvis. There's lots of Bob Dylan I don't like.
I do appreciate he's a master songwriter. I like the songs. I just don't like his voice.
But you like other people doing Bob Dylan's
songs. Yeah,
and that in itself. I get you there.
But
yeah.
I did once get heckled by a busker who said, he said to me, do you like Bob Dylan? And I was like, no. Why are you asking me that? But he was like, how can you not like Bob Dylan? I was like, I cannot like what I like. Thank you very much.
Well, I hope you nicked his hat full of money and run away from the street from it. That'll teach you.
Boss me about. Bob Dylan on me.
I think what they need to do is my perfect musical biopic would be a film about Marquis Smith and the Fall.
Yes.
And the person to play Marquis Smith, David Thewlis.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Wouldn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh. What a great idea.
Yeah.
Oh, should we make it? No.
I think we should. I think, yeah, because, you know, yeah, you can say he's too old. Marquis Smith looked as though he was 56 when the Fall first started, didn't it? Yeah. But I think Marquis Smith, yeah. And Samantha Fox as Brixie.
Well, remakes. Can we please get Ralph Fiennes to play Leonard Rossiter?
I've said this for a long time.
Have you been saying this? Yeah.
As he ages, he gets more Leonard, doesn't he? Yeah.
Maybe. Have you not thought that maybe you never saw Leonard Rossiter and Ralph Fiennes in the same room? Whereas Ralph, you know, Ralph Fiennes came to the fore Rafe-y. After Leonard Rossiter. Ralph. I'm calling him Ralph.
I've had a long standing. Adoring from afar of Rafe since, like, let's say the early 90s. And I once queued up to see him in a play and didn't get in, but I did get a fine from London Undergrad. That's another story for another day. But he's just a lovely stage and screen actor. Love him. Might get an Oscar for a Conclave this year, you never know. But he is getting more and more like Leonard Rossiter, and it's confusing me in parts of me that I don't want to talk about on the radio.
You can imagine if he came on the talk show and he was wearing a cardigan.
Oh, no, Miss
Jones. Yeah.
Martin leans across.
Resonant sound coming. RIP this week, Paul Morrissey.
Who, Martin? Explain.
Paul Morrissey. Filmmaker, very closely associated with Andy Warhol. Morrissey was the in-house filmmaker at Warhol's factory during the 1960s. And he becomes almost a bit like Warhol's gopher. He would do loads and loads of stuff. He managed the Velvet Underground for a couple of years. He organised the Exploding Plastic Inevitable shows. He made the films for those shows, those early Warhol films, which, although they were called Warhol films, Warhol had nothing to do with them apart from putting his name on them.
Everyone's famous for 15 minutes except the guy who made Andy Warhol.
He's
famous,
and Warhol's famous all the time. Mm. So Morrissey made such films as Trash, Flesh and Heat, which... They're pretty difficult watches.
I was going to say, I remember seeing something like this in the 90s.
Trying to watch Heat again.
This is a challenge, isn't it? There's one which is just like a shot of a skyscraper or something.
Well, that's Empire. And Warhol may have made that because there's Sleep. And then Empire is an 8-hour shot of the Empire State Building.
Yeah.
You know, an exciting bit comes when they turn the lights
they
on.
They did a lot of drugs in the 60s, right?
But like Morrissey, let's say, made more like narrative films using stars of the factory, most notably Joe D'Alessandro, who's still working now in movies. But these films are difficult to watch because it looks as though everybody in the film needs a good wash. And you feel like you need a wash by the time you've washed it. They're sort of quite grubby, life in the raw sort of things. Mm. But they do have a certain immediacy to them. And then in the 1970s, Morrissey goes over to Italy where he makes Andy Warhol's Flesh for Frankenstein and Andy Warhol's Blood for Dracula, both of which Warhol had nothing to do with apart from to put his name on. And so Morrissey was always fighting to actually get recognised for a lot of the work that he'd actually done. And both of those horror movies look absolutely gorgeous. Mm. Shot in Italy, they used Cinecittà Studios, and they're like nothing like these rough and ready films that he was making back in New York and LA with Warhol. So... I could probably talk for hours about him, but I'm going to leave it there.
Yeah.
And it's a sad loss in some ways. Yeah. But he was incredibly right-wing, apparently, as well, Paul Morrissey. So, again,
so many of those 60s, 70s
they
kind of
all
culture.
Do. Yeah. Yeah.
Disappointed.
And we have another one. You going to do this one?
Yeah, I'm really sad about this one.
Yeah, come on.
Oh, give her a better bell than that. Terry Garr. Now, I think you're probably more familiar with her than me. I mean, I know her from seeing Tootsie, mostly. And she was obviously the sidekick in Young Frankenstein and...
Inga. For a role in Sir Hay.
Just a very engaging and witty and... I remember her being in films and just... She sort of takes centre stage.
When she's
like,
on, you can't look at anyone else on screen. And she could turn up anyway. She'd be loads of TV. You were saying you watched.
I hadn't seen. I'm not a Trekkie.
No.
And I haven't seen many of the early Star Treks. But the first three series are on Netflix, and she was in an episode towards the end of the second series.
Right.
And I watched that the other day. It was good fun. She wears a fantastic 60s. Mad opal fruit coloured dress in it.
Well, she started off as a dancer, and I found something online which is all these clips from Elvis movies like Viva Las Vegas and Kissing Cousins, and she was a dancer in about six or seven of these Elvis movies, and it sort of highlighted where she was in the. And so she did a lot of work in those sort of films in the 60s, and then she started moving to more dramatic roles. First thing she was in properly was Coppola's The Conversation, and she's only got one scene with Hackman, but she's great in it. And it's like it's quite a pivotal scene in explaining Hackman's quite problematic character in the film.
She just comes up, delivers truth, clears off.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I think she sometimes thought that she wasn't getting enough recognition for what she actually contributed. And I think that's probably a fair view on my point.
But also she was part of that generation where once you got to a certain age, those parts just dried up.
Yeah, well, I mean,
she was quite outspoken about.
Yes, she was. You know, so more power to her arm. But she did end up becoming part of Coppola's repertory company, Zoetrope, and she was in. So she was in The Conversation and such things as Black Stallion, Escape Artist. And then her big starring role was in the disaster that was One from the Heart.
And I haven't seen that, and it's available to stream, and I think I'm going to give that a watch.
It is a great movie. And unlike Megalopolis, that's one I can go back and watch again.
Yeah, that and After Hours, I think, are really lovely 80s.
After Hours... Which I think has about half a dozen fantastic female actors in it, and all of them get a great bit to do. And probably a lot of people might know her as she was Phoebe's mum in Friends.
Friends, yes.
But unfortunately, she was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis
about
20 years ago now, and almost had to give up work a few years after that. But she's sort of one of those people. It's like the screen lights up whenever she's on. And always keep an eye out for her. And it's just, it's sad that we won't be seeing her again. But there's lots that you can hunt out to find her at her best.
And what else can we hunt out? What is our trailer trash this week?
Yes, trailer trash. Trailer trash. Well, this one I'm not going to be hunting out is a new film from Robert Zemeckis called Here.
Which seems to have one camera shot angle in the corner.
There's one camera shot. Oh, no, it's so avant-garde.
It's got lots of de-aging, and it's the same. It's Hanks and Robin Wright, which is the
combination from Forrest Gump.
And I've never seen that film because I've just objected to it completely.
I'm gonna stand with you there. You know me, I don't mind parading my prejudices.
But what's come out... I mean, I do love Back to the Future, and you've never seen Back to the Future 1, 2,
It's a Wizard of Oz situation with me. You know,
he's never seen The Wizard of Oz,
I can live with that. You know.
Lee said soonest menace about this.
The de-aging looks awful.
It looks like another one of those films where just watch the trailer and it's all in there.
Yeah, that's it. And it'll be some folksy sort of, if only we could all be nice to each other sort of schmucky stuff.
Schmucky.
Trailer Trash 2.
Fantastic looking queer. I've just noticed actually on the agenda.
It's just a film
we're here and we're queer.
Luca Guadagnino.
With Mr. Daniel Craig.
If only I could say that name again later in the show.
The trailer is just so hot and sexy and steamy, isn't it?
It looks gorgeous as well as cinematography and the production design. It looks just...
It looks like Hobart Catnip for me. Daniel Craig looking gorgeous and... I think the trailer has Sinead O'Connor's version of All Apologies.
Yeah.
Nirvana's All Apologies.
It's based on a novel by William Burroughs.
Mm-hmm.
Not the most adaptation-friendly writer, let's say.
We've watched Naked Lunch and I haven't got a clue what happened in it.
I'd like someone to take on something like The Place of Dead Roads or something like that. It would be bonkers, a truly bonkers movie. But this... is sort of capturing the feel of Burroughs' time down in Mexico, where he killed his wife by playing William Tell.
Yeah, that's putting a naked lunch, isn't it?
Putting an apple on her head and trying to shoot the apple off. He missed. Yeah. I don't know if that's going to be in this film, but he is carrying a gun, isn't he, on his hip? So you never know. But it looks fascinating.
Looks hot.
Hot. Right, that's all bloody hell.
Talking
time.
Of hot.
Yes.
We're
going to go into our first piece of music, which, seeing as this was a restoration of this, was shown at the Celluloid Screams Festival last week.
We were there, weren't we, Mel?
We were there.
Yeah.
Blood and Black Lace, and this is the theme music by Carlo Rustichelli. You're listening to the film show on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM and on digital, and that was the theme music from Blood and Black Lace by Carla Rusticelli. And it's down to me now to officially welcome to the show Melanie Gourlay. Melanie, hello.
Good day.
Why are you here?
That's the big question, isn't it, that we all ask ourselves? I don't know. To make people's lives happier, I guess.
And a little bit scarier sometimes. Yeah.
That's right. I don't know, my life gets dirtier when I'm hanging around you. I don't know what it is.
It's good.
It's not a bad thing.
So Mel, as well as being an independent filmmaker,
yeah.
Of which we have been fortunate to grace in a small background role, been on one of your sets, but also a massive horror film fan.
Yeah.
So we thought, as well as asking you about your new festival, would be great to hear your highlights from Celluloid Screams. Because although I went to the festival, and for the first time as a full, I think I missed about three or four films, and you saw almost every single one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But with you being a horror aficionado, we'd ask you what your highlights were from the festival.
Well, I was surprised because the highlight that sticks out for me was, and I've seen it before, the 35mm Grindhouse, the secret screening, was Pieces, which I've seen before. And when it rocked up, we watched all the credits and stuff at the start, the trailers and all the old horrible
We talked about that the other week, about how we loved
so
the trailers
disgusting.
For that.
I thought, oh yeah, I like this film, that's cool. And I just, because I was with this audience and stuff, I just don't remember it being that fun. And I was absolutely laughing my head off. Everyone had such a great time, and considering the time of the morning it was,
we got out of there at 2 a.m.
It's just bonkers. It's just wonderful. So yeah, that was definitely,
they are great midnight shows, aren't they? We have too few of them now, don't we in this country. It's something that you would think maybe somewhere like the showroom would institute either on a Friday or a Saturday night, even if it was one a month, you know.
Yeah, we're thinking about
it. And get that culture going again.
Yeah,
of going
they
to
used
the
to do Midnight
that
Marauders, that Simon used to do, which is great, and people used to get dressed up and stuff. So we're trying to get there's quite a lot of stuff going on at the moment, so I'm quite excited for that. So midnight movies would be a welcome return for sure.
I love the season. So they had shorts, but the way that they do the shorts is they're coupled with... It was a really nice programme of shorts. And in fact, I found a lot of the shorts... Because I like a serious arty-farty type thing. And I found a lot of the films were... Yeah. Mm. What?
But a flux gourmet. But a flux gourmet.
Yes. But there was a lot of jokey... what was the Frankie Frico.
Frankie Frico.
Because he was. They had a video store set up in the cafe area.
Yeah.
Where Frankie Frico was there all weekend, and those filmmakers, they were there the whole weekend, weren't
they? Yeah, they were. They were great. It's like chilling with everyone, having a laugh, and they seemed to be in each other's films as well. There were loads of films. It's like, hang on a minute, isn't that you?
So there's a group of Canadian
Astron Six.
Yeah, that was fun. I really liked, and in fact it won the audience vote, and I'm forgive my pronunciation, but Freewacker, which is an Irish language film, and it was on at the London Film Festival. I don't think we've got an English or a UK release date yet, but it was the audience choice, wasn't it, at the festival? Yeah. Did you enjoy that one?
Yeah, I did. Mm. Yeah, I thought it was good. Yeah, I love a bit of folk horror. Mm. Yeah, I'll just watch anything really that's set in a house with a scary family.
There was a Spanish one with a similar theme, and The Wailing.
Yeah.
Enjoyed that too. What was it? Did you have any other highlights?
Yeah, I really enjoyed one of the short films. One of my favourite shorts was called Meat Puppet. And it was like, wow, that is how you make a really good point about how annoying your boyfriend is. It's like,
there was, I can't go into too graphic a detail about this one, but something ends up in a blender. Is that the one? No, that's not the blender one.
It all kind of blends.
Yeah.
It's where he ends up kind of in... His brain ended up inside the puppet. Because he'd been too busy distracted by video games or something to go to his girlfriend's graduation.
Yes, with the hand. The puppet became fixed on his hand.
And this crazy, crazy situation happened. And at the end of it, she was on the verge of helping him out of this, impossible thing. And then she realised that up until this point, he'd been playing video games. And she's like, do you know what? This is the last straw. You're on your own, mate. Sorry. I just thought that was so clever. Really good. I really enjoyed Ghoulies Go to College as well. I'd never seen it before. I've seen Ghoulies when I was a kid, and it scared me, even though it's ridiculous. So seeing that with a crowd was really beautiful. And also Steppenwolf as well was another highlight for me. I love a grim revenge film, and that just ticked all the boxes. And he was quite a funny anti-hero as well. So.
And what about the closing film? So the closing film was a UK premiere of Crazy House.
Yeah, I liked it. I think it was a bit divisive.
How do you explain that film?
Yeah, good luck.
I did. When it finished, I said, what the Samson and Delilah have I just watched? It starts off, so Nick Frost is the dad in like a sitcom family. And it's very much, it looks like sort of a Married with Children type set sitcom. And it's filmed like a sitcom.
Yeah.
And it's that sort of 90s quality to it. Yeah. And then it kind of switches. And I think the festival programmer, organiser Rob was... described it, and it's perfect. Mm. Suddenly it just turns into Funny Games.
Yeah. They described it as Married with Children meets Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. It's like a home anti-home invasion, backwards home invasion film.
Yeah. Nick, and then they described Nick Frost in an interview saying about it, this film should never have been made. Catch that if you can.
Yeah, it's good fun.
But like, that's someone else's festival.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your festival,
I've got one.
Mel.
I've got one.
Have you ever put on a festival before?
No. How hard can it be?
How hard is it?
It's really hard, actually. Yeah. What am I doing? Why did somebody stop me?
What made you... Because this is the thing. Because this is how you made your first feature film as well. Somebody said you should make a film and you did it.
People plant seeds. Yeah. I just got... You know, it's awful, really, but even in 2024, I just got annoyed at the imbalance of, like, male and female, you know, in the industry and also in film festivals. And you hear, stuff like, we didn't really get many women submitting. Mm. It's like, yeah, but they don't have the same opportunities as the men's. So, right, fine, I'll do it myself. So I got a bit angry, and it was Jimmy again.
Had someone given you an extra glass of wine and you were like, I'm doing this.
I was in Whitby and I had a lot... Lots of wine, yeah. But she was like, well, make your own film festival. And I was like, you're all right then.
I will.
Yeah, all right then. Yeah.
Watch me. See if I don't.
And I am. And I woke up and I was like, oh, a bit of a wine head the next day. And I was like, oh, geez.
What have I said now?
What have I done? But it's going all right so far, actually.
You've got a very exciting lineup.
I might have.
What have you got?
Well, I wanted to make it right inclusive and accessible for as many people as possible. So we've got a section in the morning which ties in with the showroom's family time, and that is like shorts that are kind of age appropriate for family audiences, but of lots of different countries, different subjects, really cool. The next section is another section of shorts, but it's for over 18s. And that's, again, a mixture. We've got a Q&A with the director and the writer, of Born on Sunday Silence. That's going to be really exciting. And then we've got some more shorts with a feature film called Shanghai Girls, which is extraordinary. And I'm doing my first ever virtual Q&A. They're going to be in Shanghai at 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to be in Sheffield at, 7 o'clock. So that's scary, but they're so lovely.
Shanghai Girls. Yeah. It looks
well, it was like, it's just about a bunch of girls that were famous for being kids in this choir, and then they get back together in their 40s and just their journeys and what they've been through.
A collection of rarely told stories of middle-aged women. Now that's got my name
on it. That's right up your
street. Right up my
street. They're so cool, and people need to hear what they have to say because of their experiences that they've had. We've also got a Q&A panel with some rad people, so that's going to be amazing. Toby Poser from Wonder Wheel, she did Hellbender. I saw it at the Cellular Dream. She's a massively fierce supporter of women in cinema. And she's a very prolific filmmaker. Along with her and Noima, we've got like lots of other people chatting away.
You're closing with a very exciting... Yeah. Well, it's already a bit of a classic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I was like, I could put on a film that, I don't know, might... People haven't... I wanted more people to watch this film, basically. So Coralie Fajit's The Substance is still in cinemas, and it's still brilliant, blowing people's minds. Yeah. Whether I loved it, but whether you like it or not, you can't diss it for what it did. It's just insane. One of my favourite things is seeing the people come out of the cinema after they've watched it. They're like, look like they've been hit by a bus. And she reminds me of Julia de Cornu in a way. She started with Raw and then was like, someone was like, you made a movie. She was like, yeah, hold my beer. So I'm going to make this tan now. And that's it. And so Revenge was Coralie's first movie. It's a rape revenge film, but it's done in such a way, and it's just really entertaining. It's really beautiful.
Because we talked about this film just the other week.
Yeah,
because we
yeah, I watched and, it yeah. after
oh, okay,
having
cool.
seen The Substance. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, what do you think?
I liked it, but you could also see it was a bit of a dry run for The Substance, because there was a lot of stuff that was in, you know, she used some of the stylistics, some of the situations. But it just rattles along at such a pace. You don't really think about that until it's over. But yeah, it was a very stylish piece of work where you could see where she's sort of up the ante,
yeah,
let's
absolutely.
Say,
for, you can see the same person,
for The Substance,
like,
yeah.
The same use of the gaze and stuff in both films, like how the camera looks at a woman and a woman's body and stuff like that. And it's just really interesting. It's like, why shouldn't a woman be dressed like it's her body? You know, it's fine and stuff. And then also that she's in this relatively normal situation, but something awful happens to her, which is, even though it's normal, but it's not normal, it's common. And then what she's put through and how she deals with it. And it's also bonkers as well.
Yeah,
so it's like, I don't know. If that ever happens to me, I'll know what to do.
So when is all this happening?
Oh, yeah, I should probably tell.
When and where?
It's not long. Oh, God. Oh, God. Hold me.
It's only about 3 weeks away.
Saturday.
Are you going to tell us?
Saturday. I don't want to say it. Saturday, the 23rd of November.
Right.
It's all day. You can get a pass for all the day if you want to, or if you just want to come and watch bits of it, you can just come and watch bits of it, and there are tickets available for that as well.
And it's going to be on where?
Oh, yeah. I'm so bad at this. Oh,
information.
It's all right, we're here to see you.
As they say in The Prisoner, information.
I just assume people will know. It's on at the Showroom Cinema in Sheffield.
And that's on the November the...
November the 23rd.
November the 23rd.
Yeah. I'm going.
Yay!
We're there all day with a placard.
Oh.
So you're not doing the show that day?
Oh. Well,
I think you might be able to squeeze in, you know. There's a break between family time.
I might have to miss Born on a Sunday. That's all right.
That's all right. A few shorts. Yeah. Get back in for Shanghai Girls.
Yeah, I will hot-foot it from the festival. It won't be the first time I've hot-footed it away after as well. Exciting.
We wish you well on that, and we will be giving more updates to
Thank
it
you.
To make sure that
yeah,
as it
people,
approaches
people,
because
I keep forgetting to tell people. Apparently,
keep forgetting to turn up.
Oh no, I'll definitely be there. I nearly worked that day as well.
Okay, well, we've got another piece of music now, which actually relates to
the festival.
Last
Celluloid
week's
Screams,
Celluloid
yeah.
Screams. It's a piece of music from The Wicker Man.
Nice.
And yes, there was a documentary about
the children of the Wicker Man.
Children of the Wicker Man, and yeah.
How your parents F you up, even though they may not mean to, but they do.
I need to say no more about the Wicker
Absolutely.
Man, but whatever you do, don't watch The Wicker Tree. And I did, and I'm still suffering from it. Okay, so this is Willow's Song.
The things I'll give to you. a stroke as gentle as a feather. I'll catch a rainbow from the sky and tie the ends together.
Listening to Sheffield Live, the film show, 93.2 FM, online and on digital. I'm Denise. Still got Mel with us.
I'm still here.
We're going to review some films now. I think you're going to kick us off, aren't you?
Yes. Keeping with the horror film, I went to see a film that's getting a lot of attention right now, Heretic.
Bad Hugh.
It's had loads of coverage. You know, Hugh Grant, if you've never seen him before. Well, yeah.
Oh.
I think this film isn't going to be exactly what people are expecting from it. Because, I mean, the first 45, 50 minutes is pretty much a discussion about belief and religion.
Oh.
With not very much in the way of scares. Maybe a sense of unease.
So it doesn't start with the two girls turning up
yes,
at the
it
house
does.
Like in the trailer?
It does, but yeah. He has a discussion with them, and I'm trying not to say too much.
Right, okay.
Too
spoilery.
Two girls who are going door-to-door promoting the Church of Mormon knock on Hugh's door,
As he's asked for someone to come round to tell him more about the church, and he invites them in, telling them that his wife is in the kitchen making blueberry pie, and things don't go well after that. Albeit it's not, there's nothing horrific, nothing gory or anything, just this sort of sense that something is really, really not right in this house. And I found it quite a fascinating discussion about belief, and that is what really carries the rest of the film through.
Okay.
So it's very much on atmosphere and the look of the thing. And fair to him, Hugh Grant is great in it. He really gives a really, really great performance. And the thing about it is it's pretty much almost a complete three-hander between the two girls and Grant. And I'm just... Chloe West was one of the girls, and I...
One of the girls.
Sorry, can I not say girls anymore? Because they were teenagers.
I'll come to that later.
Oh, yeah. One of the women in it. I don't know whether I can say actor or actress. It's a minefield, this, isn't it?
Oh, you can't say anything anymore, can you, Martin?
No, I can't. No. Sophie Thatcher and Chloe East are the women in it.
Okay. Young women, fine.
Young women are.
Yeah. Go on. Go on. So are you rating it, Martin?
Well, I was going to tell you something else about it.
Oh, go on.
It's almost impossible to see what's going on.
Oh, is it too dark, not lit?
I don't know if this was the way that it was being projected where I saw it, but it is so dark.
Oh.
I mean, they're in this...
Not the kind of dark we like, eh?
No, they're in this lounge for, like I say, this first 45, 50 minutes. And then they go somewhere else in the house, which is almost in pitch darkness. And I was certainly finding some bits pretty difficult to actually see what exactly was going on. So I always think, well, how is this going to look on television? So I hope it was maybe that the projection wasn't bright enough. But even so, it's still... It's still murky, is how I would describe the presentation. But I thought it was pretty good.
I'm really excited for it. It's doing really well on Letterboxd as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as I say, it's all about belief. Mm-hmm. And like all films like this, there comes a point where it almost collapses in on itself when it tries to explain everything. Mm. And at the end... It pretty much has its cake and eats it, and I'll leave it there.
Okay.
But
a gentle rate, then.
I'm going to rate it.
Okay, great. Now, never let it be said that I am not entirely up to date, and I bring you cutting edge new releases. I went to the showroom last night, and to kick off the Art of Action, which is the VFI National Action Film Festival season of films, let's call it, and the showroom has shown me some extras as well, but they kicked off with Steamboat Bill Jr. 1928, Buster Keaton, but also there was a pre-film chat from a bit of a heroine of mine, Pamela Hutchinson, did a short lecture beforehand talking about some of these films and putting it into a lovely context. It's the last Buster Keaton sort of big film, and it's the one where he plays like the disappointing, effeminate son of a big butch steamboat captain.
Is this the one with the storm in the town?
Yes, so it basically, there is the daughter of a bloke with a bigger, better boat, the competitor of his dad, a disappointed father who's never met him before. It's just normal, just turns up. Mum said she wanted me to come. He turns up with the wrong trousers, the wrong hat. He looks like wet through seven stone, completely not what you wanted. Lots of, it's the one basically that ends with a massive tornado. And it's the one with the iconic, the
front
side
of the house
falling in on him and he's standing in a little window.
Yeah.
It's running at the showroom till Thursday. It's 70 minutes. It's pure cinematic joy. I can't recommend it highly enough. It's like a 2014 print, I think. So it's the one with the Carl Davis music.
Score.
Oh, I loved it so much. I was on the front row, just like the biggest smile on my face.
And it's nice to see that one get a bit more attention because the general.
I've
is
seen
probably the
general
the
that many times.
But
yeah,
Steamboat Bill Jr. is. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
As I think pretty much all of Keaton's feature length.
Yeah, and it was, what was so lovely about it as well was the audience reaction to it was the laughs, big laughs, all in the right places.
Yeah.
It's still, it's 1928, it's nearly 100 years ago. It's fantastic. Yeah. Get yourself to watch that.
100 years
say.
From now.
What you got next?
Well, you've got it as well.
I saw it too, but let's let you review it.
No, you go first.
No. No, Anora.
Anora, yeah. Mm. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there with a smug look on your face.
You tell him why it's good, and I'll tell him why I hated it.
I thought it was... brilliantly acted. Mikey Madison, I thought...
I agree with that.
An absolutely, balls-to-the-wall performance, which is like acting without a safety net sort of thing. I can see... And I know you haven't fully told me, apart from the fact that you didn't like it, there would be things that you would find problematic in it. Things I was sitting there thinking, I'm not sure. And
look, I'm always dubious about a male director who is so obsessed with that world. Like, lap dancing. And just to put it into context, explain, like, so the film
She plays a lap dancer in a New York club who meets up with the son of a Russian oligarch. Ivan or Vanya, he takes her away to Las Vegas for a week, where he then proposes to marry her. They go to a church in Las Vegas where they get married, come back to New York.
Reality sets.
Reality hits, but his mother and father are told that he's married, and they set the wheels in motion of getting the marriage annulled by a bunch of his father's goons, is the best way to put it. And then that kicks off almost like a nocturnal odyssey around New York, trying to find Vanya, who has now gone missing, and then ends up back in Vegas, where all things... come to a crunch, let's say.
Yeah.
I thought it worked. I thought it worked brilliantly. I thought the middle section sort of just cranked up the hysteria of the surge. I thought I found a lot of it quite funny as to what was going on.
It
took a real turn there the way it presented that. But I don't know. I mean, what were we saying, that we can't show stories from that milieu?
No, I'm not saying that, Martin.
No, I'm sorry, I wasn't accusing, but
So one of the opening shots is a panning or tracking shot of a bunch of women sat performing lap dances, but they're all facing the camera, they're all topless, and they're all having a lovely time. And it's just, it was a bit like, so for me, it was like the experience of watching The Wolf of Wall Street, where you've got this horrendous people behaving awfully.
Yeah,
then you go, oh, how long have I got to put up with this before I get to the crux of the, where we redeem people, or I don't know. I found it, I was baffled by, it's got one can, didn't it? It won.
Yeah.
And I do agree that the performances are great, but I think that it's formulaic and shallow, and the end, I can't discuss the ending without spoiling it, but I didn't like that.
The ending is quite ambivalent, isn't it? How you want to take that ending?
I took it the Denise way.
I'm just saying. You know,
I
took it the other way.
I didn't find it moving at all.
I agree
the performances are great in it, and I think Mikey Madison especially.
Yeah.
But I could see what was coming a mile off. Like, and I just didn't believe that she was that going to be that wrapped up or convinced. She's like this strong, sassy, fight back woman, as if she wouldn't have had that 21-year-old spoilt kid's number straight away. She would have known. Her motivation in the film seems to be, I love him.
I'll agree with you there. That bit needed to, why she would have just gone for that and not thought. I'll just get them what money I can out of him this week, and then.
Yeah,
but so I think I, it's. Yeah. But no, I
you highly rate me, not mate.
There you go. So yeah. you can.
But I think
take your pick, yeah. And you know.
My possibly a reason that I didn't rate it so highly as well is I saw it on the same day I saw potentially one of my absolute films of the year. So Small Things Like These is the new Cillian Murphy film. It's based mm-hmm. on the book by Claire Keegan, which was shortlisted for the Booker Prize in 2021. It won the Orwell Prize as well. It is Cillian Murphy, basically 1985, plays an Irish daddy. He is very reserved. He's very quiet. He's very introspective.
He's incredibly handsome.
He's a hardworking man. He's got five daughters, a loving home. He runs his own business, but he's not massively well off. But he witnesses things at the Magdalene. It's like a Magdalene laundry at the convent, and starts to question. But it's very introspectively done. It's very beautifully done. Do you know what it reminded me of? Terence Davies films? You know,
right, yeah.
Like, it's so... It feels 80s, but it's set in the 80s, but it kind of feels 50s. It feels like... And it's all about what it takes... Why this culture of silence around what was going on in these Magdalene laundries and... The oppression of the people around it not to say anything, and why wouldn't they say anything? And it just really explores that idea, and I just it's one of the most beautiful films I've ever seen. I absolutely adored it.
So you're rating that?
Yeah, Emily Watson turns up as a mother superior there's a wonderful scene with the pair of them where they are. It's like a confrontation scene. It's the big confrontation scene of the film. But they're just talking about domestic trivialities. It's a subtext of what it is.
Yeah.
It doesn't spoon feed you anything. It looks amazing. The soundscape is fantastic on it. High rate, 5 stars.
There you go then. Well, I mean, there's 4 very different films there. You can go and try out and then argue with whoever you go with about it afterwards. Okay, but this is a track that Mel has chosen, and this is from Luca Guadagnino version of Suspiria. And this is a piece by Tom York of Radiohead.
Thanks for picking this, Mel.
You're welcome.
Radiohead appear quite a lot in Heretic as well. So
it's all coming together.
And this is Suspirium.
Yum, yum.
Songs and laughter reading. given, always and never been true.
Unfortunately, we're fading that here as we're running out of time, and we want
to too much to talk about.
Too much
today.
To talk about, yeah. And a very quick canter through films that are starting next week. There's a lot of them.
Oh, film of the week, though, Red One,
which we talked about months ago.
This is the Father Christmas Kidnapped madness. It looks 2 hours of insanity. Make sure you see it with a friend and alcohol if you're so inclined.
Lots of alcohol, I think. Then Paddington in Peru, not saying any more about that.
Point Break,
the original on the big screen.
It's the way it's got to be, Bodhi.
Where it needs to
she
be.
She was
seen.
My woman, man. I think it's got to be a talk along that one.
Yeah.
But the big releases for me, Blitz and Bird. Blitz I've seen, brilliant.
Yeah.
Bird I haven't, can't
Andrew
wait.
Arnold's film about people living on the margins of society
Franz
in Kent.
Franz Rogowski. Oh,
and Barry Keoghan. And I haven't seen a trailer for this, have you?
Yeah.
Have you? I've missed that
then. Yeah. I'm going to go and see Practical Magic at the Light tomorrow as well, just to kick Halloween out, get the horror over.
Get it sorted. All right, okay, well, next week there'll be no Halloween stuff.
None of that. No. And I'm not here because I'm off stalking Nick Cave and Leslie Manville.
Oh, give him a... That poor man. Right, well, in the meantime, enjoy your week. Enjoy your films, and we're going to leave with a piece of music by Goblin from the original Suspiria.
Suspiria again. Enjoy your films. Thank you.